Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
How are you now? Brought to you by, well, Barclay Pierce, I guess. It's the Theory of Thing Investment Podcast. I am James Whelan, Managing Director and Head of Wealth at Barclay Pierce Capital Asset Management. A reminder that all advice contained is general in nature. Please speak to an advisor about your needs. Mark Well, I am joined not by Heath Moss this week, but by an old friend of myself and the show, one of the originals and the best, David Scutt from StoneX Group. He is the market analyst there. David, how are you now?
Great to be back, James, and yeah, I'm taking my place with my fellow Adelaidean here in the other studio.
To
be here.
We've got to hit that quota, mate. We've got to have a 50%, at least a 50% Adelaide quota. As much as I disagree with it, it's in the contract. Now, we're coming in via, I've got Amit from our marketing team has managed to put together an amazing little studio thing here, Studio One at Barclay Pierce in Sydney. We've got video stuff going on. This is a new one for us of coming in. In high definition, again, now that's it. Now, first off, I mentioned the deal of the week last week was Wellnex, that we were raising money for them to buy pain away. Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, we got the deal done. It's the money was raised, us in tandem, joint lead managers with Ord Minnett, we managed to get it done. So that stock is going to come back on the market with pain away on its books and will be massively profitable based on all of the analysis, and we're really happy about that. So it's good to, mate, I saw a lot of sausages get made this week, and they say that you should, two things people should never see is laws and sausages. And
I'm very happy for you, mate. I'm glad that it all went down well, and obviously not an endorsement from my end, but yeah, I'm glad that glad it got done and was successful.
Yeah, it does. It does set us up quite well and set clients up as well for 2024. But enough of that. Mate, Ryan's Bar.
Yes, can be a dangerous part of town.
I saw a Twitter photo. I saw a Twitter photo of you with a beer glass with Ryan's Bar on it.
Mm-hmm.
And then I joined you at Ryan's Bar for a couple of shandies last night.
Correct.
What are we taking away from that with regards to the Australian economy? Oh, first off, football cards. Hang on. Here we go. We'll get to it. Pick a card. Give us a name. This is me learning the football teams, football players, right?
All right.
Good.
I've gone and pulled out. Oh.
Up to the camera.
Absolute superstar, Kalyn Ponga.
Kalyn Ponga, with the headgear. Absolutely blind.
He'll be dueling it out with Reece Walsh for the Queensland fullback spot, no doubt this year.
I've got to draw someone from the Tigers here, and I've gone with Dane Laurie. He's a fullback, and his junior club was the Lower Clarence Magpies. So now
there we go.
A bit more than I do. So Ryan's Bar. That's... Are we talking the last days of Rome here or what?
Oh, it feels like a lot of people have done with 2023. Obviously, it's been a pretty tough year when it comes to discretionary income for anyone who's got debt facilities in this country. I do get the sense that maybe the corporate cards are being put down and people are using that to leverage into a bit of fun. But look, you've always got to seasonally adjust at this season of the year.
It's pretty seasonal.
It's always pretty mental down there. It's a bit of a zoo on occasions, and I wouldn't expect to see any different, particularly on a Friday afternoon today.
Well, yeah, I know. We'll get straight to the thing that we mentioned here. So I was talking to Martin Wetton on the chatter before, and I've completely lost the thing that I was actually going to talk about now. It was in Chris Kent's speech the other day with regards to, it hasn't shown up on my document, but just with regards to the increasing amount of savings or cash flow that was...
It was the hit to cash flow, disposable income.
Yeah.
And predominantly from what we're talking about when it comes to interest payments and tax take as well, income tax take. Obviously, a lot of people made a lot of focus in the national accounts that we saw as a share of disposable income. Tax was right up their new record levels. Obviously, state's re-tax cuts still legislated at this point to come in at the start of the new financial year. It's not going to really go and take it back too far, though, certainly not towards the levels that we saw only a decade or so ago.
Yeah, I am looking at this tweet here from Justin Fabo, talking about Aussie households. We'll see if we can get this pasted into the – we'll see what the image is there. Australian households, how much tax Australian households are actually paying here.
Mm.
There is a, I've got to describe this for people who are listening because we go on to the regular podcast channels as well. Net interest payments are up also, but back to 2019 levels as a share of income. But the income tax payments, there's a black line that has just gone like that,
mm.
which is disturbing how much tax we are paying as a country. And there seems to be no sign of slowing down based on the scenes, absolute scenes last night or yesterday evening because we all went home very early, so it's okay.
Oh, 100% we went home yep. early. Yeah, this, the way where it's going at the moment, I know obviously the labour market remains strong. That's a big factor behind it as well. And as yep. long as that continues, I know the trajectory will probably go and continue. Obviously, we'll have that pullback for the stage three, presuming that it does go ahead. But certainly as an overall mix from a historical perspective, we'll still be pretty elevated regardless, even with those tax changes coming through.
Yeah. Do you want to go and talk about Japan now? It's going to be a quick switch sort of.
What do we want to know about Japan?
Do you reckon that they're going to yield curve control? I was having a chat with Marty Wetton about this. Mm-hmm. Anytime I get a chance to chew his ear, I will chew the hell out of that thing because he's such an intelligent guy. And mm-hmm. I want to chew your ear on this one too. Bank of Japan and yield curve control.
Yeah, yield curve control is not so much the issue now. I think it's more the front end of the curve and,
yep.
and what they're going to do when it comes to that key overnight policy rate, which is 0.1% negative. There's obviously a lot of speculation that they might go and try and change that and maybe even preemptively before they can see that inflationary pressures are spurring wage pressures, which is what they've been banging on for a while.
Yep.
I just saw the revised GDP figures came out for the September quarter. Absolute shocker. I think annualized rate down 2.9%. Down 2.9%.
Sorry, annualized rate GDP.
It's going backwards.
Japan.
Yeah, and predominantly it's coming from the domestic economy, you know, the thing that they're trying to go and spur on to go and generate wage pressures.
Yep.
Look, I don't think they should do it. I think if they are smart, they'd rather go and try and keep the yen relatively cheap versus a basket of other currencies to help their trade-exposed sectors.
Yep.
If they go down that path, it's going to be a policy error.
Big call. Okay, let's see. So, yeah, you have written here in a tweet, for a bank seeking to foster a virtuous cycle of stronger growth leading to – are you okay if I quote you? It's very
please
awkward. For a bank seeking to foster a virtuous cycle of stronger growth leading to higher inflation and sustained wage pressures, preemptively hiking rates before others cut would be probably the dumbest idea the Bank of Japan could come up with for export-reliant Japan. That is true.
Yeah, and just going to go and strengthen the yen. We're starting importing disinflationary pressures, deflationary pressures. I'm not sure how that goes and corresponds with a virtuous cycle where you want to build inflationary pressures.
I'm sure they'll manage
to. But, strange things happen in the financial world.
Yes, that is. Sure does. It's been a crazy time. Strange. Now, you mentioned GDP, which reminds me that we had our own GDP numbers drop mm-hmm. earlier this week. We were up-ish, which is great as a country. But I saw a chart that was showing that as a country, it was beautifully summarized. As a country, we're fine. And, you know, the old thing, we go from boom to okay, we don't go boom to bust.
Mm.
But personally speaking, per capita, we're in a recession. And
yeah.
that I think, I mean, you know, Ryan's bar on a Thursday night aside, that I think is the same thing that's being felt by Australians everywhere.
Yeah, and real net disposable income, a feature where you're going basically standard of living has been going backwards for a while as well now. On paper, it looks fantastic. You know, Australia's continuing to grow, outperforming other nations, yada, yada, yada. But on the ground, the individual, I think, is probably not enjoying such rosy numbers. And look, when you look at the details, a lot of it's coming through from government expenditure. A lot of it's coming through from quasi-government-backed infrastructure investment. You strip that out of the equation, the private sector actually looks pretty weak.
Good enough. Now, let's talk about generally. Go to the US. November was – I love this stat, and we'll see – we're going to put this in. The 60-40 portfolio. So November was a crazy good month,
mm-hmm.
as everyone knows. It was good. I don't want to be the Chris Joy. I called it. I told you so. invest today. But I'm going to – I did have a note that was out early just going November is a very investable month, and this is more investable than I would think it would usually be.
Mm.
From everyone – and if you go back and you think at that time when yields were – touching sort of going around that 5% area at
yeah.
the top of the month, everyone was thinking, okay, they're going to potentially go up. The narrative had changed. And I remember you, I did quote you many times about that around that time
mm.
with the faster they go up actually means that the quicker they're going to come back down.
Correct.
Proved perfect. Well done. Thank you very much. Money was made by all. The 60-40 portfolio had its ninth best month. If you're on the trading floor, you do it like that. Ninth best month since 1976 with a 7.3% increase. And I'm a 60-40 guy, as you know, on the record with that one. So absolutely belted it last month. Do you reckon that potentially it's going to hold?
A lot of soft landing good news has been priced into that story.
Yeah.
The way that I look at central bank pricing right now is that the markets are rejoicing. The fact they've got no adding to rate cut bets coming around the world, you know, predominantly being led by now the ECB. But with that actually sort of contemplating the reason why these rate cuts are being added so aggressively.
Yeah.
Real economic activity. Looking at Germany, for instance, the disconnect there, the DAX is riding all-time highs. At the same time, you're looking at German factory orders, industrial orders just in the absolute pits. And that's before a lot of this tightening that's already taken place in the ECB kicks in. From a earnings perspective, it looks like the risks are sliding to the downside.
Yeah. You mentioned the ECB. Does Christine Lagarde talk too much? I don't mean anything, but that I listened to what Paul Donovan, who does the morning podcast for very cynical for UBS, and he's the gruffest, most he seems friendly, but he comes across as this is a bad idea. This person is an idiot. This data is a nonsense, and it's just that cynical sort of thought. You almost fell into it yourself a little bit, actually, sometimes a while ago.
Yeah.
You got to get a bit more up talk, you know?
Yeah. Look, I don't know if she talks any more than any other central banker. Some of them love the sound of their own voice, obviously.
Yeah.
One thing that sticks out with me, though, is like going back to the other GFC era and rolling into the Euro area debt crisis, and she was the French finance minister back at the time. I remember when they were talking about peripheral spreads starting to go and blow out and everything else.
Yeah.
She made this really arrogant comment along the lines that, that France is not the periphery and stuff like that. And
I remember that.
Just at the time, it came across as an extremely arrogant remark and probably not well thought out. And it didn't take the markets long to go and start testing that that theory of hers. So that's something that's that's resided with me for a long period of time.
Don't poke the bear.
Yeah. Look, I don't follow the ECB probably as close as other central banks around the world. But the one thing it really comes across is I described it in an opinion piece I wrote last week, just trying to go and herd cats. It's such a diverse, complex economy, trying to go and deal with different languages, different nations. And to go and get the policy mix right and get everyone to be kind of on board is very difficult and leads to policy errors.
Well, the view is that the more – she speaks every couple of days, so the view is that there's less impact on her going and speaking about it. It stops being a market event. Like you put it in your calendar, it's just like, well, Christine Lagarde is going to go and talk about stuff again. She's going to say the same damn thing.
Yeah, Isabel Schnabel's probably the more influential one now. She was a very uber hawk and then it's all of a sudden done an about face and become very dovish, and probably her and her alone have probably put in 70-100 basis points of the cuts. So, yeah, what I'm Schnabel.
Oh, the way you said it was just too good there. What's your cut expectations, generally speaking, for next year?
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
When it comes to your finances, you think you've done it all. You've saved, you've researched, and you've invested all that you can. Now it's time to take those investments to the next level by using the brand behind every great investor, Yahoo Finance. As America's number one finance destination, Yahoo Finance has everything you need, whether you're a seasoned trader or just dipping your toes into the market. Join the millions of investors who trust Yahoo Finance to guide them on their financial journey. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit yahoofinance.com, the number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com.
The US.
I think that the markets are overs at this point in time.
With the pricing cuts?
Yeah, there's no doubt that there's a lot of people who are doing it tough who are forced to go and borrow at the front end of the curve. But I think a lot of middle America, a lot of homeowners are locked in at ultra low rates and they've got a labor market which is still fairly strong. I don't think the Fed's going to go and tighten anymore. Financial conditions have already eased a lot. Does the Fed need to go and ease in that scenario? Given inflation, whilst it's trending in the right direction, economic activity is turning in the right direction. Do they want it to go and get too much out of control and see that in a potential risk we see a second wave of inflation?
Yeah.
I don't think they will. So I think there's probably going to be some cuts coming through, whether it's going to be five or six as the markets are currently looking at.
Six cuts price for 2024.
Yeah, and it's been rapid. That's more than doubled in the space of about 6 weeks.
That's overs, I reckon. So I'm with you on that. That's overs.
I think the ECB is going to be able to cut pretty hard, pretty aggressively. I understand that. That's because I believe it's going to be something along the lines of potentially a hard economic landing. But other jurisdictions around the world, a lot of them comes down to China as well. At this stage, it doesn't look like they're going to be that buttress that will go and support economic growth more broadly. So look, easing, but yeah, don't go chasing waterfalls.
Don't go chasing. And a big hello to Jason Waterfalls if he's out there too. We're going to take a little break. What football card have you got there for us?
We can I've still got a panel. Oh, yeah, here we go. Let's go. Oh, this one's there.
Sticking with Newcastle there.
Oh, the great man, Bradman Best.
Bradman Best. Yeah. He's a good player. What's his stats?
What's his stats?
Yeah.
He's pretty mean. He's 182 centimetres, 103 kegs.
Yeah.
Made his debut back in 2019.
Winger?
And... he's a centre. He was a junior for the Woi Woi Roosters.
The Woi Woi Roosters, big fans of theirs. I think we actually do sponsor the Woi Woi Roosters as well. Again, this show brought to you by Barclay Pierce. Whatever it is that we do it well. What were we talking about? Something else? What was next? I had something else to talk to you about. We've talked about cuts. We talked about the ECB. We talked about Japan. Local RBA. We've seen the last one-day meeting of the RBA for the year, as predicted, as everyone predicted it was a hold, two-day meetings of the RBA starting in February next year.
Yep.
And what was it that they're going to have longer to look at the data? Yeah, this is Gareth was talking about this.
Yeah.
That they're going to have 10 days to see the data that comes in, which means that they won't actually be able to see the CPI numbers that are beforehand.
Yeah, that's correct. And there's still going to be some occasions where big data events come out and they'll miss those, which is one of those anomalies. And you go and scratch your head and think, hey, did this big review, come up with all these recommendations, and sometimes like the key piece of the puzzle, the information that you need, you go and have a decision afterwards.
What's your thoughts for the Australia RBA? The Australian RBA?
Yeah, look, it sounds counterintuitive. If it's likely to be... When you talk about, the central bank's more likely to go and cut earlier than others, I think the RBA is right up there in terms of those that might actually go and ease because of the way that our mortgage market's structured.
Yep.
But we haven't seen that snap yet. That's the thing. Like, aggregate terms, the economy's still ticking along okay. At the individual level, obviously, there's a few more strains. But the labour market's really strong. Yep. And, yes, it's coming off the ball a little bit. Again, monetary policy's set to go and try and balance aggregate demand against supply, aggregate being the emphasis there. And in aggregate terms, when you're running population at 2.5% per annum, the growth, there's a natural bid there automatically.
Yeah, that's not too bad. All right, now we're going to go to what else are you seeing in the market? There was one other big thing that I'm seeing because I've got Bloomberg sits on the TV screen behind me. Every time, I hate it, it can't be in front of me because I'll just sit there and just watch it all the time and not actually get any work done. Every time I turn around, I see the story talking about the Indian market. Now, I don't know if this isn't your forte, this is my side of it, because I'm an Indian bull, as you know.
It's had a good run.
It's had a great run. It's about to overtake Hong Kong for the fourth biggest market in the world. Called it.
Yeah. The poor old Chinese markets, my goodness. They look sick.
Yeah.
Completely sick, and transfer of risk, not only now to the property developers, but some of the things that have been floated, talk about unsecured lending being provided by the banks, the state-backed banks, the quasi-banks to select property developers, putting that risk on their balance sheet as well. Weak banks don't really allow for a lot of lending to other parts of the economy. So they say the stock market's not the economy, but when I look at Chinese markets right now, it does give off that kind of that vibe.
Yeah, it does. And this is one of those times that the Indian market and the economy are attached to each other. And this is sort of my bull case for India, is that with the growing middle, the reason why I'm bullish on India, the growing middle income people, and that bracket is expanding exponentially. They have a systematic investment plan in place. People put systematic investment plans in place, very similar to our superannuation industry and the superannuation funds that we have here, except that's forced by the government. This is one that people actually just elect to go into. Small amounts every month that just go into the market. And because India is a closed market, it has to stay in the Indian market.
All right.
Effectively, as that economy grows, money has to pour into managed funds. those managed funds have to buy the stocks because they've got to keep their ratios up. It's just, it's like a big forced system to go up, similar to our market here as well.
What are valuations like? No, do you go and apply like kind of traditional Western valuations on the market?
No, not in this case. Not in this case. And I've seen it done. I saw someone sent me a thing saying, James, look at the PE ratio of the Indian market. It's overcooked. It's overbought. I was just like, throw the PE ratio out the window. It doesn't matter. Things have to be bought. As long as India is growing, it is just a natural emergence that the stocks will just have to be bought in the Indian market. It can't go overseas. It's hard to go overseas. It's just a forced case. I've never seen anything more simple in my entire life, and it's being proven the case. Someone is launching a four times. Speak now. We're going to bookend the fall of Rome conversation here with someone is launching. This is from Eric Balchunas, so he's Bloomberg ETF master. Mm-hmm. Someone is launching a four times S&P 500 ETN exchange traded note with the ticker XXXX, 4X. I'm thirsty. Which would be leveraged a leveraged amount record in the US. We are so back. Are we too back?
Does reek a bit of ring the bell.
Four times leveraged ETN, mate.
Yeah.
Get after it.
Yeah. Like some of the bear ETFs and things that we see, the bull ETFs, that take us to the next level.
Yeah.
If you consider going trading or investing one of those particular investment vehicles, make sure you know the way that that works, and whilst it magnifies potential gains, it can also magnify potential losses.
Good chat. You're a nice cover. Speaking of potential losses, and bar chart has been putting out some they're generally bearish on everything that they see. It's the on the Twitter account Bar Chart. But their charts are amazing.
Yep.
And I do love them. So you look at the chart and you're just like, wow, that's okay. Chapter 11 bankruptcy filings have jumped to the highest level in 13 years. That's an amazing chart, just looking at exactly how many companies have actually filed for Chapter 11 over in the US. So at the same time, I like the way that I've sort of bookended this last days of Rome mandate, the thesis that we're going with here. Chapter 11 filings are at the highest level in 13 years.
Mm-hmm.
The four times leveraged S&P 500 exchange traded notes getting launched. Bradman Best is still playing for the Newcastle Knights.
Yeah.
Just keep buying stuff. I don't know. Like it's crazy bullish. Look at Google last night, a 6% jump on the back of the AI side of things. I'm still seeing those top seven stocks.
I saw a lot of that narrative stuff as well. I've been more of an FX orientated analyst and then a trader from back in my day. I did notice the US dollar weakness, and that was coming through partly because what was going on with the yen. That's probably an underappreciated factor as well that goes and helps to juice a lot of those big tech earnings. They earn predominantly in US dollars, and of course they've got big operations abroad. I can go and translate that back, helps their bottom line. So I'm not surprised. No, I know the AI narrative was certainly strong again last night. And look, to be honest, we've got payrolls out tonight. I think every man, woman, child, dog, everyone in between thinks that we're going to see a pretty soft report. That's what the other data is saying.
Yep.
And I reckon there's probably a degree of front running and getting him to go, and, hey, the narrative of the disinflationary pulse going through is still there.
Yep.
Bye. So let's go and see what happens if that plays out.
Yeah, there's no reason not to. I think that we're just going to wrap it up in a second. We're going to do the NFL tips in a sec. But the Ryan Dietrich, who's a great Twitter account to follow as well, talking about that traditionally if you have a month like November, that 80% of the time the market is up 12 months later, and I think on average it's up about 13%. I love those stats, those sorts of things. Generally everything that comes out is just like there's a reason to stay in the market. There's always a reason to stay in the market. Don't be silly. NFL. Did you bring a tip for us?
No, no idea, mate. Okay. I don't follow it closely enough.
Do you have any value to add with the non-markets side of this podcast?
Oh, yeah, not really. just looking forward to this the summer of sport. Got membership for the SCG and Adelaide over now, so I'll be able to go. Hopefully the Windies can go and roll up and last more than 2 days for a test match. That'd be helpful.
I just need to stretch it out. They should just play it twice if it goes for 2 days.
Yeah, so I'll
go around again.
Looking forward to being back in early January for the other test match as well.
Yep.
But, mate, apart from that, I'm just looking forward to having a short break over Christmas and New Year, spending some time with the family, and then cracking on in 2024.
I've got a big 2024 set for myself as well. So my January, I'm going to take some time. I'm going to be working from, I always work from the farm down at Gippsland, down at Lakes Entrance. So I work from that. I'll be doing shuttling back and forth to Melbourne to be able to do, actual on-site visits and do my job that I have to do as well. But I'm looking forward to Las Vegas. For the NRL doubleheader that's happening over there, and booking some tickets today, I think, actually.
Just remember, mate, with the US dollar where it is against the Aussie, like, no, bail costs are going to be a lot more expensive, so behave over there.
But it's cheap. No, it's like, there's never been a better time to book a trip to Vegas. Hello to my wife if she's listening. Dank Trader 4000 has given us amazing NFL tips in the past. He got 3 out of 3, I think, last week. If you want to make some money, just skip to this part of the podcast. Bet with your head, not over it. Two options this week. All right. Here's his smoky. He wants to go a little bit more edgy. He's gone Seattle, the Seahawks of Seattle, over the San Francisco 49ers with a 10.5 start. And the lock of the week is Denver outright win against the Chargers, paying, wow, $2.23. So here we go. This is the lock of the week, outright Denver over at the Chargers. He's seeing that the Chargers are cooked, have no offensive weapons left, and only managed 6 points against New England last week. You, me, and a few friends would probably go quite well against the New England Patriots right now, David.
Oh, fantastic. I've always wanted to go play in like a wide receiver role.
That's right.
Definitely have the speed.
I'm going to put you at center. So the season, and with Seattle, so yeah, the season's on the line here. Look, we're done, mate. Congratulations on sitting here and doing this podcast with me.
It has been fantastic. Yeah, top floor.
Don't know why I said that. Yeah.
moving on up, we can't do from Barclay Pierce Capital.
No, yeah, mate. It's fantastic.
You're already there.
Yeah, I don't know where I go from here. I don't. I stay here and I build this thing into something amazing. Yeah. And it is happening too. Thanks for joining and thanks for being there. Thank you to everyone joining us for the podcast today. Have yourself a good weekend or have yourself a good week ahead based on whenever you're listening to this. I know we get a lot of Sunday listeners too. Thanks very much, everyone. This has been the Theory of Thing Investment Podcast. Mark well.
When it comes to your finances, you think you've done it all. You've saved, you've researched, and you've invested all that you can. Now it's time to take those investments to the next level by using the brand behind every great investor, Yahoo Finance. As America's number one finance destination, Yahoo Finance has everything you need, whether you're a seasoned trader or just dipping your toes into the market. Join the millions of investors who trust Yahoo Finance to guide them on their financial journey. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit yahoofinance.com. The number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com.